are listening to Radio Albion. This is a narration of an essay that was originally published on my Substack that covers the anti-free speech laws passed in the Ukraine since the election of Volodymyr Zelensky and how the country is being reshaped into a place that will be completely hostile to nationalists. Ukraine has not held a national election since 2019, and it has now been approximately 7 years since the last presidential and parliamentary elections took place. Volodymyr Zelensky is now the country's de facto dictator. Of course, his supporters and the Western media will argue that this is necessary due to the ongoing conflict with Russia. However, Zelensky hasn't just been a wartime president during his 7 years in power. He has made a number of changes to domestic law that have nothing to do with the war with Russia. Instead, they have everything to do with declaring war on freedom of speech in the Ukraine. The latest of these laws, which was symbolically signed by Zelensky on Holocaust Remembrance Day, introduces criminal liability for anti-Semitic acts. Law number 2037-9 creates a graduated scale of punishment from fines and restrictions on liberty right through to prison terms of up to 8 years. Much like similar laws in Western European nations, such as France and Germany, this new Ukrainian law covers acts of inciting hatred as well as publishing material with manifestations of anti-Semitism that may lead to the humiliation of honour and dignity. In simplified terms, this law will prevent people from criticizing Jews as an ethnic or religious group. However, this law goes far further than that, as it is built upon the previously adopted foundational law titled On Preventing and Combating Anti-Semitism in Ukraine, which was signed into law by Zelensky in October 2021. This original law, Law number 1770-9, is built on the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance, IHRA, definition of anti-Semitism. But as many readers will know, the IHRA definition of anti-Semitism goes far further than attempting to merely silence criticism of individual Jews, powerful Jewish groups, and Jews as an ethnic or religious bloc. The IHRA definition of anti-Semitism also seeks to criminalize those who criticize the State of Israel. Specifically, the IHRA definition of anti-Semitism lists the following as an example of an anti-Semitic act: accusing Jewish citizens of being more loyal to Israel or to the alleged priorities of Jews worldwide than to the interests of their own nations. This law essentially criminalizes justified criticisms of powerful Israeli lobbying groups that are run by Jews. In fact, this law could see people sent to jail for criticizing the role of the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee in influencing US elections to the benefit of Israel. But the IHRA definition goes further, making it illegal to describe the actions of Israel and Israeli settlers as racist, or to compare acts of modern-day Israeli aggression to historical acts of genocide. And of course, the IHRA definition of anti-Semitism also lists accusing the Jews as a people, or Israel as a state, of inventing or exaggerating the Holocaust as an act of anti-Semitism that should be punishable under the law. Nationalists who are still supporting Zelensky can hardly claim that this new law came out of nowhere, as it has clearly been in the works since 2021 at the earliest. But worse still, this new law is not being introduced in a vacuum, as it is just one of the new hate crime laws that Zelensky and his administration have brought into force. In fact, Zelensky has been busy both introducing new hate speech laws and strengthening existing ones. The truth is, Zelensky has a long history of pushing for greater restrictions on freedom of speech, especially relating to criticism of LGBT groups. In 2021, Zelensky first introduced draft law number 5488. This bill remains under review and aims to define intolerance as an aggravating factor for crimes, which would provide harsher penalties for anti-LGBT violence. In December 2022, Zelensky signed a media regulation bill explicitly banning so-called hate speech and incitement based on sexual orientation and gender identity in all broadcast, digital, and print media, effectively gagging the media and the press when it comes to issues surrounding the LGBT community and their activities. In May 2025, Zelensky and his cabinet of ministers approved the rule of law roadmap for EU accession that specifically schedules the adoption of laws making intolerance based on sexual orientation an aggravating circumstance by the second quarter of 2026. In August 2025, the Zelensky regime introduced a major bill, draft law number 13597, to strengthen penalties for discrimination and hate crimes, proposing to include sexual orientation and gender identity as protected categories under the Ukrainian Criminal Code. With such a major conflict taking place in eastern Ukraine, you would think Zelensky and his government's time would be taken up with matters pertaining to the war. However, Zelensky seems to have a lot of spare time, and not just for foreign trips, where his wife is let loose with the credit card. Zelensky has clearly been busy beavering away to ensure that when the war does finally end, those who are left to rebuild will have far fewer rights to speak freely than they did before the war began. The only other policies that Zelensky has pursued so aggressively relate to conscription, with those between the ages of 25 and 60 now subject to compulsory mobilization if they are fit for service, and those between the ages 18 to 25 and the over 60s being pressured to join voluntarily. But that is clearly not enough, as earlier this month, Zelensky himself pleaded with foreign leaders to return Ukrainian males of fighting age living abroad in order to keep feeding the stuttering war effort, and there is now even talk of childless women being forced to fight. Which brings us to the question, why are nationalists still fighting for this regime? It is no secret that many ethno-nationalists and self-styled national socialists have eagerly signed up to fight against Russia and pro-Russian groups within Ukraine. Many images are widely available of soldiers and armour openly branded with symbols and flying flags that are associated with both modern ethno-nationalism and historical nationalist regimes, such as the Third Reich. What's more, it has been widely reported by the Western media that some of the fiercest fighting has involved these nationalist units, which are composed of both Ukrainians and overseas volunteers. The problem for these nationalists, though, is that however this conflict ends, there is no place for them in the new post-war world. The worst-case scenario is that these men and women end up dead, used as eager frontline cannon fodder by a Jewish dictatorship. The best-case scenario is that they return home, but the question is, what would they return home to? If they remain in Ukraine, they will now be subject to laws and restrictions that will silence them and restrict their freedoms. In fact, in a post-war Ukraine, it would not be unreasonable to surmise that the very banners those nationalists fought under will be outlawed under the new anti-Semitism laws. If the survivors head west, they will not be welcomed as heroes, but in fact, it would be likely that any veterans of these nationalist units will be met by Western counter-terror operatives who will be eager to interrogate them. Before the outbreak of open war in eastern Ukraine, it would not have been unthinkable for some of the nationalist units, such as the Azov Battalion, to have been declared as terrorist organisations by the UK state. And in the US, such calls were made. In October 2019, 40 Democratic members of Congress formally asked the State Department to designate Azov Battalion as a foreign terrorist organisation. However, as these nationalist units are effectively doing the bidding of NATO, the EU and the Zionist-controlled US State Department, it is clear that both the UK and the US are happy to turn a blind eye to a few flags and military patches as long as those wearing them are killing Russians. But once the war is concluded and those nationalist units have outlived their usefulness, this will undoubtedly change. This brings the intelligent observer to one conclusion. Those nationalists who have fought for the Zelensky regime have been willing tools of both an anti-white domestic regime and of an international Zionist cabal. Whilst those nationalists have been happy to bear arms and kill other whites for Europe's most Jewish government and its American backers, that Jewish government has been passing laws that will reshape Ukraine when the war concludes, making it a country with far fewer freedoms for nationalists whilst granting greater protections for sexual, religious and ethnic minorities. But these new policies are just part of the proposed post-war plan for Ukraine. Numerous reports have emerged stating that immigration into Ukraine will be drastically increased when the war comes to an end. In October 2025, the president of the Kyiv School of Economics and freelance advisor to the head of the president's office, Timofey Milovanov, was asked how many migrants would be needed to rebuild the country. He replied, 10 million. Get ready for a new Ukraine. If we don't learn to be smarter ourselves, we will import not tens of thousands, but millions. That statement does not stand alone, as policies for mass immigration into a post-war Ukraine have been put forward by the United Nations. The International Organization for Migration, which is part of the UN, has published a document titled Ukraine Crisis Response Plan 2026, which explicitly includes goals to establish a comprehensive migration policy framework that creates safe pathways for foreign migrant workers to meet recovery goals. When we hear calls for millions of migrant workers and the need for safe pathways to a European nation, we all know what that means in real terms: a flood of migrants from Africa and the Indian subcontinent. And such a flood of migrants ultimately means one thing: white replacement. What's more, the rebuilding that will be done by the migrants will be financed and overseen by BlackRock, the company which currently acts as the strategic advisor to the Zelensky government on matters of attracting capital for post-war reconstruction. And for clarity, BlackRock was founded in 1988 by 8 people. Of those 8, 6 are cited as having Jewish heritage, including Larry Fink, the CEO, and Robert Capito, the president. BlackRock aren't doing this for philanthropic reasons. They are doing this because there are massive profits to be made and huge amounts of land and resources to take ownership of. It's almost as if this was all part of a plan. Send as many white men into the meat grinder as possible. Ensure that those most likely to die are ethnically conscious nationalists whilst the fighting takes place. Pass new hate speech legislation to gag any nationalists who remain, then bring in millions of migrants from Africa and the Indian subcontinent to replace the whites who died fighting, before finally ensuring that in the post-war rebuilding phase, large Jewish-owned globalist companies can swoop in and take ownership of land and resources for massive profit. This is how, in less than a decade, one of the whitest and most nationalistic countries in Eastern Europe can be ethnically and politically transformed, and a certain ethnic group can profit from that transformation. But don't say that in Ukraine, as you can now be arrested and end up serving up to 8 years in jail for merely suggesting such a thing. The only reasonable conclusion one can draw is that nationalists who have fought for Zelensky have ultimately been used as disposable cannon fodder in another war between whites. But as the death toll has risen and more Ukrainian bodies have piled up, plans have been put in place to reshape the country, both ethnically and politically, reducing the lucky few who survive to a hated minority that will be gagged by legislation passed by the man whose refusal to accept a peace agreement drew out the conflict and kept the meat grinder churning. When the conflict finally does end, those heading east past Poland, Hungary and Romania will be greeted by a new sign. Welcome to the ethnically diverse gay disco formerly known as Ukraine, now under ownership of BlackRock. This is the reality of what nationalists have been fighting for.